So, Dixie Chicks.
You know, so that of the many music related news items that have been going on, I only saw that they're trending. I have no idea.
I know nothing about this.
Yeah, I don't either.
This is the first I've heard.
Did they say something mean about President Bush?
No, they're touring. They're going to be touring the U.S.
I just the Dixie Chicks are touring.
Yeah, it's like 62 dates.
No
like
kidding.
Serious tour.
Well, son of a bitch. Wow. You know, we should probably take an outing and go to one of those shows.
I would love to see them, actually. I genuinely like the Dixie Chicks.
I do, too. You know, I was being sarcastic when I said that. I mean, I'm sure the tickets are...
Well, they're like $100.
Yeah, I'm sure they're, you know, bottom line.
I remember that band when they were playing furniture stores.
They played like little venues around. Mm-hmm. They did like the Texas Circuit. And would show up in Lubbock, right?
Yep. And what's her name? The chick that Susan.
Susan.
What's her last name that wrote Wide Open Spaces?
Susan Gibson.
Gibson.
Yeah, she was in.
Matt, frequent guest Matt Munoz.
Matt Munoz, former bandmate. Oh, girlfriend. Really?
Oh, well, there you go. Well, this is years and years ago. She was living in Amarillo at the time before she moved down to Wimberley. At the very, like, when Natalie Maines first joined that band, like, they would play these, like, they would play, literally played furniture store openings in West Texas.
Have you ever seen a picture of what they looked like pre-Natalie Maines?
Well, they were, like, gingham dresses and...
They actually saw
like a Grand Ole Opry thing or something?
Well, it was
like,
real, real kitschy.
Kind of like Chicks from Dixie.
Oh, there you go.
It's Pearl kind of stuff.
Kind of, sure. I remember seeing them, like, at the Curveball Folk Festival years and years ago, and I was like, oh, this is way too novelty acty for me, you know. And then a couple years later, they just blew up, and Wide Open Spaces was like this huge hit and everything. And then I was like, that can't be the same. It can't be the same band. Well, they got rid of the first singer, and then just everything changed.
Well, they added Natalie, which. Brought along Lloyd Maines.
Lloyd Maines is the reason why they got Natalie. That they were working with him, and he suggested her.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Yeah. Well, maybe anyway. If we're lucky, we'll catch him at Rooms to Go.
There we will. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
It's like where they'll be singing about the Wide Open Spaces in their living area.
Feng shui kind of thing.
They have been out of the limelight for a few years now. So, you know.
Can we talk about music?
Let's talk about music.
It's been a little while since we've sat down, so there's like...
Well, because we still need to play theme music, so we're going to do that.
Sure, that's fine. Whatever. Play only theme music from here on out. I'm cool.
Sounds good to me.
I'm
out of here.
I'm Ryan. That's Shane. That's Mark. That's Kevin. Otherwise known as Cool.
Yeah. And this is Somebody Likes It. Sunday was my birthday, and and so that's.
I wished you happy birthday on two different platforms. Actually.
I had my.
I was really excited about my birthday message to you on Facebook. By the way, did you translate it?
It was quite funny. Well, my phone had died, so anyway, I couldn't. Today, I finally got a charger, and I'm getting things like nice well wishings from people like 2 days ago. But I was driving, and there's an old man. A radio show that I really, really like to listen to on Sundays.
Like it's targeted towards old men, or it's by an old
both,
man.
Both. Okay. It's the old memory maker. Or that's the DJ guy. It's a like a big band show from this radio station.
Oh, I know
in Killeen.
I know where you're going with this.
And I'm a huge fan. It's my by far. Like I was just driving around running errands, and I love listening to the show. And so then I'm listening to this one song. I'm on the highway, and I'm not really paying attention. And all of a sudden, I was like, that sax sound sounds a lot like the sax sound in our intermission theme music. And then right when I thought that, it started playing our intermission theme music. Like, the da-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na. And like,
is that how you found that, Kevin?
No.
But here's the interesting thing. It wasn't the same arrangement. It was in the middle. It was like a solo taken in the middle of this piece of music. And all of a sudden, the sax player just starts playing the solo. And the rest of the music is totally different, but he's going playing like, you know, I mean, it was that song. And I got so excited that I like swerved it. I was trying to find my phone so I could call somebody, and I like swerved in the
oncoming. The lamest excuse for a wreck ever.
They had our theme music. They had our intermission music. And then like I couldn't get you on the phone. No, nobody would answer their phone. And so it was very exciting to me. And just all the more reason why I should be listening to the Old Man Radio Show on by the Old Memory Maker.
I just love the idea of DJ Old Memory Maker.
He's old, let me tell you.
So I sent Shane, and actually since we last got together, Shane and Mark have both had birthdays.
That's true.
So candles all around, gentlemen. Speaking of the future. Or in this case, maybe the past.
I was going to say it's the past. It was a long time ago.
Well, in this case, a little bit of both. It was announced today that Pandora is buying radio, and radio is going away.
Like
RDIO.
So interesting terms on that buyout too.
Yeah. Well, and this isn't necessarily You know, the business side of that isn't really what we cover, but I did think right. It was interesting because I retweeted it today, and I immediately heard from one of my friends who was like, "Oh, this really breaks my heart. I've been like a radio."
I don't even know what that is.
I've only seen the name. I don't know exactly what they did.
Was it Pandora or Spotify that bought it?
No, it's Pandora. I saw the article. I saw the headline today, but I was like, I don't know what that is. But I love like how I don't know what it is, but when you said Pandora bought the radio, I just imagined that like the company bought like
all of the FM radio waves. FM bands.
They just bought a big radio, like a boombox. Yeah, it's good. Well, then they seriously overpaid for it because it was like $75
million. $75 million. Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess the takeaway from that is it sounds like among music services that there will be some consolidation. And so I don't know if that's a good, bad, or a different thing, but at least some people are bummed that you know, more choices on where you can go get your streaming stuff is.
Yeah, I think consolidation is never necessarily a great thing. I think having multiple platforms, options, yeah. Is always a good
consumer
thing.
Choice, what have you.
So that was one thing that I wanted to share that's happened, just went down today. And
a little lighthearted discussion, by the way.
A little lighthearted discussion. The second thing, I won't spend a whole lot of time on this. Obviously, if you're listening to this at any point in the future, which is your only option, then
unless you're in the garage right now and hiding behind this giant curtain.
Godspell.
Right,
yeah. Then you know about all the scary stuff that went down in France, and so I won't dive into any of that. We could certainly cover it under other circumstances, but there was one thing that I thought was particularly interesting and kind of relates to this podcast, which was that I was watching the MSNBC feed when all that stuff was breaking news. And of course, that's where Brian Williams ended up, and watching Brian Williams have to explain to people what the Eagles of Death Metal was amazing.
I talked to our mother about this, like, and she's like, "Oh, I thought it was like a hardcore metal band or something." Yeah, I'm like, "No, it's ironic,
yeah,
Mom."
It's like, and he was
one
like,
of the members of the band was listening to a death metal band and said, "Oh, this is like the Eagles of Death Metal."
Yeah,
and they thought it was funny, so they called their band that.
It's pretty funny,
anyway. Yeah, so in a weird way, it's kind of like for those guys, I'm sure that it was like we have this name that we think is hilarious, and now it's associated with this terrible event, which is unfortunate. But really, like watching Brian Williams try to elegantly weave like that was an ironic name.
Yeah,
into
I wish
the
I would
story,
have seen that.
It was quite something. Anyway,
at some point, we should talk about a little band called Husker Du.
Yeah, let's do that. You picked it, so
I did.
Go forth.
Well, it's a I picked some might say their seminal record, Zen Arcade, a record that is hugely influential to a lot of bands that I and a couple of other people in this here garage really love. Wasn't exactly what I was expecting, but we had 3 weeks off. Due to various health crises that people had and work conflicts and birthdays and what have you. But anyway, I had a lot of time to absorb it. I like it quite a bit more than Shane. I have no idea what you think of it, Kevin.
This is my week to probably fall somewhere in the middle of both of you guys. I think in general, Ryan promised or made us promise that none of us would use the term Husker don't. So I won't really.
Hey, thanks for sticking to that one, by the way.
Sure.
You threw that in as quickly as you could get to it.
But I will say that, so it's really like there. It was a fascinating listen, and I obviously had a little bit of time to roll around in it. I think, you know, the sort of messier, less melodic punk stuff, sort of a little bit more on the hardcore side, is probably just less my wheelhouse.
And not to cut you off,
yeah.
You know, I picked it because it lands on so many best of lists of greatest rock records or whatever, and I was like, I should finally just listen to this thing.
Sure.
And I got two or three songs into it. I'm like, oh, fuck. It's a hardcore record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it took me a little while to get to the rest of it, and it's not exactly a hardcore record, other than the drumming, which pretty much stays, hardcore all the way through. But beyond that, it's kind of all over the map.
It is all over the map, but the stronger songs. Okay, so let me just back up for a second. Did I like the record? No. But did I hate it? No. I just can't imagine of any instance where I would willingly ever want to listen to it ever again.
There are several songs that I would absolutely be willing to listen to of my own volition. Now.
There are better and worse songs for sure. But I will say one thing. You said it wasn't what you were expecting. I expected it to be a lot more just anything that Bob Mould has done since he's left Husker Du.
Well, and that's the thing. We're looking at this through glasses that are filtered through stuff that we knew from Sugar and Bob Mould and the Pixies and Nirvana, which I can definitely hear big time.
Yeah.
And this is the genesis of where that stuff came from.
I appreciate that. I'm not a big Bob Mould fan in general. I just don't get it.
I like his stuff. It's fine.
And this is fine. Yeah, that's as worked up as I can.
Shane is giving an athletic shrug.
We've probably done this before, but yeah, that's the sticker that's going on the front of the record.
Shane Bartel says, it's fine.
And then a silhouette of you shrugging.
I mean, I get it. In the sense that, if you take their place in history, and a lot, the thing that I appreciated the most about this is this album was the trying to work in disparate genres. And when he said they talk a lot about working in melodies, Bob Mould is saying something, I'm paraphrasing. He always tried to come from a melodic viewpoint, which I can see that it's definitely a lot more melodic than if you go to listen to California hardcore . Black Flag or...
Sure, yeah. A lot of that stuff was just, angry rote aggression.
And, and I will say that, even when I listen to the hardcore stuff, it's I found myself, trying to think about, being that age, in your early 20s, and, sort of how much extra energy you have, and being at some shows where, this band, even at that age, when I was that age, would not have been necessarily in my wheelhouse. But I've been to some shows with a lot of energy and a lot of people throwing themselves around, and to that end, it's there is sort of some sort of sweaty triumph on the other end of it that people go it's a process.
But this is the Thinking Man's Sweaty Triumph, which by the way is an amazing band name.
Thinking Man's Sweaty Triumph.
For a band that probably opened for Husker Du in 1985.
Sure, yes.
Thinking Man's Sweaty Triumph.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't we listen to one of these guys?
All right, so let's get into Hare Krishna, which actually doesn't have...
Is this the one where they use the melody from
I Want Candy?
Yeah, totally.
But I think that whoever owned the publishing to I Want Candy, Husker Du wasn't a big enough deal for them to bother with messing with it, but they definitely ripped it off. And I think it's still a pretty good song, but it still kind of falls in the hardcore side of things. And then on the next one, we'll get into something that is a little more transition. Lotus feet. Trying to talk you out of the wrong.
Shane with the librarian.
I like punk music. I don't like hardcore.
I'm not crazy about hardcore, and I you know, I like some punk music.
And I will say, as hardcore tracks go on this record, I don't think that this one is anything close to like as sort of in there as some of the hardcore stuff gets at the beginning of the record. Like what you were saying earlier. Like,
yeah, well, I would just, you know, the way the record started off, I'm like, oh crap, this is a double album. I'm gonna have to listen to all of this.
Yeah.
But fortunately, he does not stay in that. So, and this is maybe where it starts to turn a little more melodic.
It gets.
But basically, it's I Want Candy. With
noisy, like they're, yeah. Like they're like I don't, and I like noise stuff too. Yeah, I don't know. You know, and you gotta I have to put myself in the shoes of somebody like listening to this on vinyl. Like,
well, okay, here's what kind of turned me around on it a little bit. I was putting myself in the shoes of somebody who's maybe like, who was like listening to this when it came out. This was 1982, right?
It was 84.
Yeah, so it came out. It came
out 1984. Okay,
same year as Purple Rain, around the same time
the year after Thriller.
Well, around the same time as The Replacements' Let It Be. Like, there was a lot of interesting shit going on in Minneapolis, St. Paul around that time.
Well, when actually, when you put it like that, the way that you guys just said that, like, I see a direct delineation between Thriller, Purple Rain, and then Zen Arcade.
Oh, sure.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
It's
a triumvirate.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I don't ever think I will be able to reference one without the other.
All right. My point was, like, what really – I had to kind of put myself in the head of, like, a 19-year-old kid.
That's hard to do.
Well, I was one once.
That's true.
But not in 1984. But, like, imagine that you'd kind of come up through, like, you know, these hardcore punk years or whatever, and maybe you'd listen to the first Husker Du record, and then this comes out, and, like, this could be kind of revelatory. Like, you know, if you were the right age and it caught you at the right time, I'm sure this would be fucking amazing.
Fair enough.
Well, yeah, I will say, let's say this.
It stepped outside of what a lot of these similar bands were doing.
Well, yeah, let's say this. I mean, I don't think any of us sitting around this table are thinking that this is a contrived record in any way, shape, or form. Like, it may not be your cup of tea.
No, it's a concept album, which I don't care about, by the way.
I actually want to comment on that in a minute, at least.
Well, let me just say that, you know, to that end, David Fricke, who I can only see in certain documentaries whenever his name pops up, described this record as the closest that hardcore will ever get to an opera, a kind of thrash quadrophenia. I don't know if that's a compliment.
I saw that reference more than once, reading around on this.
Nothing about what was said in that, and I'm sure it's meant as effusive praise, but nothing about what he just said there is anything that is appealing in any way to me. Nothing. Not 1 minute. If I read that, I'd be like,
Shane, you don't want to go listen to a Who concept record?
Opera? Thrash opera?
Interesting. Let me sidebar for just a second. Interesting thought here. When this record came out, the label pressed somewhere between 2,500 and 3,500.
It was 3,000 and 5,000.
Yeah. So the guys in Husker Du,
backlog of orders. Yeah.
Well, the guys in Husker Du said that. Well, they said you're going to need more than that, and turns out that they did. Well, by the time that they got everything pressed, by the spring of '85, they sold 20,000 copies. So and it sounds like, at the very least, like to a certain extent, that actually has impacted probably negatively and positively the way that this, like, certainly the immediacy with which this record was received, but over time I wonder if that scarcity hasn't helped its cult status a little bit, like in the beginning.
I think that that they are progenitors of a, you know, like a new, they matter in the scheme of things. Like, okay, I understand their importance. I understand their relevance.
They're foundational.
Here's what I think. They influenced some people who became much more widely known. And I wondered, like, before we got into the, like, listening to this record, like, why haven't I heard it before? Because I've read about it a lot and heard people speak of it or read about.
No, you and I are in exactly the same place.
And, like, why haven't I heard this on college radio? Well, once I've listened to it, I'm like, well, it's not necessarily super radio friendly. And I'm sure actually college radio stations all over the place played it. And actually, back in the day, there was a time when Husker Du and REM were like the coolest underground bands. And, you know, one of them went one way and the other one.
So, Kevin, they went in divergent paths.
They did.
Kevin, would you hypothesize that the scarcity of the record, so the fact that they didn't print enough in the outset, and this created some sort of artificial demand that suddenly
I don't know that that's
so
true.
So would the record have been as large a cult success had they just printed too many, in other words?
Well, it, you know, obviously, like it's a flimsy argument, but like given what we know, like 30 years down the road, like
there are times when like a scarcity of a product like brings its profile up. I'm thinking, of course, of Cabbage Patch Kids.
Well, yeah, that, sure.
That is
there's something to be said like, of word of mouth or word of writers.
Well,
and
I think it's
trading cassette tapes and trading stuff back then.
That's it right there. It's the cassette tapes. It's I could probably guarantee that more than 50% of the people that heard this Husker Du album for the first time heard it on a bootleg copy that mm-hmm. was. Somebody
sure.
just made a copy.
Yeah, we don't have that anymore. I mean, you know, we were just talking earlier about Pandora and, you know, and music streaming services. Like, you don't really run into that as much anymore. You can, like, email somebody a playlist or, like, but there's not the scarcity. So I think that's very applicable.
Yeah,
you
know,
what you just said.
Here's another something to chew on. So one of the articles that I really thought captured had a very interesting take on this was The Quietus, and they said here there's a quote that opens this article. It says, "I hate to have to pull this card, but if you didn't grow up in Minnesota, you'll never fully get this album. So sorry, back of the bus, please." And so that's where this thing starts. And he said this was not about a Husker Du album that's 30 years old called Zen Arcade. A friend of mine said this some years ago about another album I adore deeply called The Beaster by Sugar, led by Bob Mould, blah, blah, blah. But he says, I never lived anywhere near Minnesota. I've only passed through it very briefly once or twice on transcontinental trips with my family when I was a kid. And ultimately, the conclusion that he kind of comes to at the very beginning of this article, this exploration of Zen Arcade, is how do we know what we don't know? And I think you can kind of like, maybe the answer is we all bring our own, you know, like any piece of art, like you bring your own experience to it. And like, that's really all the answer that you need. But I do think
all the answers he needs. I mean,
maybe like, but I do think it's interesting that there's some inside baseball on this. Like my inclination was like, oh, that's bullshit. And then the more that I got to thinking about it, it was like, is there anything that's like central to Austin or central to Texas or like my sphere of influence that I'd be like, I know some shit about this because I was there during that time. And anyway, I think maybe there's a little bit of both. Like maybe there's some yes in there.
Yeah, if you think back to like say Soul Hat in like the 90s or something in Austin. But anyway, we should get around to listening to another song. And I'm thinking, well, I would either want to do Turn on the News, which I've got in my notes, is Pixies rock music, almost a cover of that, plus Nirvana, plus The Coda to Freebird, which actually, let's not listen to that, but go back. And that's totally accurate, by the way. Let's do Pink Turns to Blue, which definitely inspired a young Kurt Cobain.
So one more little bit about this record from this Quietus review, which I thought was kind of interesting. He says, of this album, there's a 14-minute instrumental, a short piano instrumental, a song with extra progression, percussion swirls, and general noise underscoring a reference to Hare Krishna's chanting practices, which we listened to earlier, a frenetic acoustic number, other points of variation. But mostly, the three pieces and rock-out approach molds guitar off in a sheet of blazing noise that feels like a corrugated aluminum wall shattering in your face. Other times, a queasy backward mask swirl, yet always with hook after hook, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. Anyway, I feel like kind of being a rock critic is maybe just coming up with the version of the corrugated metal line.
I really liked the guitar on this track.
Well, and I did too.
It was simple, like, but the way it was tuneful.
I have crunchy guitars. Arrow.
Well, and this feels like what he went back to when he was like, oh, this is where sugar should go. Like, that's, it feels like
it
the
does,
beginning
yeah.
of the
no,
natural progression.
To me, it seems like he probably is a lot more happy, and I don't know Bob Mould, but for having met him once, but yes. And
you should ask him to come try it.
I was a touring member of Sugar. I don't know if I ever brought that up. I played French horn.
were you like Bez? You just did maracas?
You were the Albert Goldman of Sugar.
Yeah. Goldman. Paul, George, Albert Goldman, and Ryan Newsom, and Bob Mould and Sugar.
So weird. Anyway.
I didn't mean to bring that up. Yeah. The other thing is that I actually, Shane and I, and probably you, Kevin, knew the producer of this record back in the day.
Right. I forgot you told me about that.
Mom?
Was it who?
No, you did know Mom back in the – your mom back in the day, but no, it was
Mom
not.
Did not produce it. A gentleman named Spot who worked at Hole in the Wall here.
He was a doorman at a Hole in the Wall.
Spot.
Yeah, dude.
He produced this record.
Wait, I just sounded like I just took a hit off a joint. It's like, yeah, dude.
And he has his own like solo career and he has photography. I think he just put out a book. So look up Spot. He's an awesome gentleman.
Just one of the
nicest people you'll ever meet. And he would never bring this stuff up. Like,
I knew him for years. We were friends. Hung out at his apartment and stuff. Like,
no, and I was working with a band, Masonic, and the guitar player from that band goes like, you know that guy's kind of a big deal, right? And I was like, no, who's it? He's like, oh, he did some producing for SST back in the day. And so I asked him about it, and I wanted to make sure my memory wasn't spotty on it.
Yeah. Clever.
Anyway, I emailed him, and he's like, yeah, that was me. Don't tell anybody. Sorry, Spot.
Okay.
Right anyway, we were talking about...
Go ahead. Go ahead. Before we go into intermission, there are two things about Bob Mould that I want to say, and one of them is, well, okay, when he was, you just brought up the fact that, you know, that he was, he became openly gay right around the time that he was living in Austin. Apparently it was like kind of just an open secret, but he started to become, you know, very open about it. Mm-hmm. And he was like one of the first like openly gay guys in rock music. You know, it was kind of it was a huge deal. And so this is why two things that you can read on Bob Mould's Wikipedia page. One of the things... And I love this so much, just the way this is written. During a stint living in New York City in the late 1990s, as he more and fully embraced his identity as a gay man, Mould's taste took a detour into dance music and electronica.
Oh, dude, that's so disappointing.
But it's so amazing. It so had to be that way.
I don't think that one's sexual identity makes you have to.
No, but he was fully exploring his sexual identity, and ergo he was spending more time in gay clubs.
Yeah, ergo he now likes gay disco music. Like,
but here's a different thing. This is a completely different angle.
Shane's gesturing.
Yes. It's after the tour, Mould took a break from the music world to get involved with another passion of his, professional wrestling.
Oh, when, of course.
You know, it gets better. When he joined WCW as a script writer in 1999 for a brief period. So Bob Mould quit music and went to write scripts for wrestlers. But hold on. Creative differences with some of the other writers led to Mould's leaving the company and returning to music. Now, what do you think those creative differences might have been with the other writers for wrestling?
I can't. I have
all of it.
No way to conjecture on that. But that is
That's awesome. a real thing.
I'm simultaneously disappointed at him going into like the disco side of things. And I think it's just awesome having Bob Mould write wrestling scripts.
Dude.
So one thing that I read a couple of times about this record that I thought was kind of interesting is the idea that it is like the whole of it content wise is about the idea of leaving home, like both physically and musically, I guess. And so one of the takes that I read on this said that it could have devolved into a like sort of a bro version of that. Now, knowing what we know about Bob Mould now, it doesn't sound like it would have gone that direction. That was my phone. But beyond that, I just go back to the fact that these guys were all like 22, 23 years old, all of them, three of them. And
Greg Norton, Grant Hart, is that right?
Yeah. And it wasn't a cliched approach to leaving home. Maybe you could sort of even characterize it about being like departure. But anyway, I just think like sort of that, I think that that was kind of a, like that sort of fascinated me. That idea lyrically fascinated me about this record.
I think Bruce Mark is
hot take.
Yeah. I was going to say, speaking of lyrics, this next, well, we'll talk about it on the outside, but let's do a few minutes with. You guys often remark or have often remarked on maybe every show that we've ever done about my propensity for paying attention to lyrics more than you guys do. Like it can make or break songs more for me than the two of you.
It's something you hang your hat on. Yeah.
A little bit. Well, I mean, it's just that way. And I heard a song on the radio a little while back, and when it came on immediately, I remembered that they are my favorite lyrics that I don't actually love. Like I love, you know, like, you know, you love
like,
them.
Hunger, it's a hunger.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the song we're going to listen to right now, and I pulled up the lyrics because you can read them. We can talk.
Like you hate love them.
You just got to listen to the song first and we'll talk about it later. Not hate love. I dearly, dearly love them, but they're like, you just got to listen to the song. And I'm sure that you've heard it. Anyway, what we're talking about is something very similar to Husker Du, and that's Heart and their song, All I Want to Do Is Make Love to You.
Mm. Well, let's get deep.
Have you guys ever heard this song?
What is
you probably have heard it in the background. I think it came out in 94.
I assume that every Heart song is like Onion bit where if it was perfectly quiet anywhere in the world, you could faintly hear Cher's "Do You Believe in Life After Love?" Like, that's what I think Heart songs are like.
The first time that I had...
I genuinely liked Barracuda.
That's a decent song.
Back when they were a rock band.
This is...
Yeah.
This was their Starship phase.
No. This is the last hit that they had. This isn't like, I think, I'm pretty sure it was 94, because I'm pretty sure the first time I heard it, I was working at the porn store. But the first time,
okay.
And that was in 94.
Dive deeper into that at some point.
And podcast, I'm sure I have.
Do we think that Cameron Crowe screwed this band up?
Okay. Why don't we listen to this?
He is married to one of the Heart Wilson sisters.
He was.
Sisters.
I think they just got divorced. He was married to Nancy Wilson. Mm. The redhead.
All right. Well, I can't wait to.
Oh yeah,
get into this.
Yeah. The only thing I will apologize in advance: this song is way longer than I thought it was. But
won't listen to the whole thing.
Oh no! We have to listen to the whole thing because the lyrics are part of it. So you have to hear the whole story, and there is a story to be told. It's a story song.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
Right.
Is it Dylan? I mean, does it rise to that occasion, that the lyrics in this? Because because it is a story song. She does. She tells a story.
Sure.
It's blurry. The logic is blurry. I'm only imagining. Well, let me back up. So this song is called All I Want to Do Is Make Love to You.
What's it about?
Well, it's
doing
that.
Doing it.
And eventually.
With a stranger.
No. Producing a child.
No, it's all she wants to do.
All that's right. She wants to do.
And so she just picks up a random dude and takes him to.
Right. So this is it starts out. It was a rainy night when he came into sight. So she's just driving around.
We're talking about the video here.
Yeah. And by the way, he's standing by the road. He's got no umbrella, no coat, and he's standing in the rain, which automatically just
should. Mark, we're talking about both the video and
we're talking about the video has got the story in there. But so obviously she's picking out a good guy to pick, somebody that's standing in the rain with no umbrella or coat that's just standing there.
Who's like both handsome and has no good sense.
Yes. And so she picked him up and. She didn't ask him his name, and then the next thing you know, they've just found a motel. And which, by the way, then the next line is, it was a place I knew well. So she goes to this hotel. She's often driving around picking up homeless men in the rain.
I'm not a fan of the word skank because it tends to denigrate. Like, I think people have their own
it tends
sexual
to denigrate?
People have their own sexual.
Every so often it doesn't denigrate.
Generally,
well, my point is, I think women should have their own sexual agency as well as much as men do.
Hear, hear.
But this is probably ill-advised.
There's a lot ill-advised. This sounds like, you know, like when you take that drug that, like, when you have restless legs and you take a drug and it makes you do weird stuff, they're like,
do you have the Jimmy legs?
No, but I'm saying they say, like, do not take this drug if you get sudden urges to gamble or have, unsafe sex. This is what this woman is taking, this drug, basically.
The Viagra ad says that it might affect your hearing. Like, I was like, if at any point that, like, you guys sitting in separate tubs and you being on some kind of weird old man crack affects your hearing, then that's a different thing. Anyway, so... You were saying.
He brought the woman out of me so many times easily, and in the morning when he woke, all I left him was a note. I told him, I am the flower, you are the seed. We walked in the garden, we planted a tree. Don't try to find me, please don't you dare. Just live in my memory, you'll always be there. Guess what happens later?
Yeah, they actually did plant a tree, and by tree, metaphorically, a baby.
So this woman's been driving around for God knows how long.
Looking for homeless men.
Trying to find a homeless man that's hitchhiking.
Who look like John Stamos,
that will impregnate her. And she always takes them to the same hotel.
She knew it well.
And then abandons them there. And I wonder how many of these guys are still abandoned there.
That wasn't the weirdest part. Like, the weirdest part was the homeboy just stayed there and got a job.
Yeah, see, Mark pointed this out. So the last verse, the one with the big reveal... is she's talking about how I ran across him one more time or something like that, and imagine him when he saw his own eyes looking back. You know, basically she's talking about having a baby. In the video, she just shows up at that same hotel, and guess who's just working behind the counter? The dude she picked up in the rain. Yeah, and now you know that he's like a respectable guy because he's got glasses. He's wearing glasses now.
Sure.
But when he sees the kid, he takes them off in a dramatic swoop.
Well, and it's like, not gauzy in that part either. Like the whole, like, the concert part, like, you know, it's all gauzy and you know, like, they're, you know, swooping around. But when it gets serious at the motel?
She says hotel, but yeah.
It's a motel.
But, you know, shit's got real.
Where the dude just stayed on as a handyman, I'm guessing,
you know, like,
originally, and now he's worked his way up to desk clerk.
Well, but you just, like...
He was hitchhiking. She picked him up. He was like, this sounds like a good gig.
I couldn't help but think it's like, hey, I'm in room 14, and I don't have a ride or a change of clothes, so can I just work here?
Well, if
and somebody said, well, yeah, sure, why don't you run the cash register up front?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, honestly, in the context of this, in the context of me looking at this, I'm like, this dude, like, ended up on top, he got laid, He was like, he had no umbrella or coat.
Now he's got progeny.
And he got picked up in the rain. He got laid. And then now he has a job and a place to live. And meanwhile, she's
and then like a pop-up year and a half later,
she shows back up with the baby.
She's driving in the rain. She's like, God, it's raining. I got to stay somewhere for the night. Oh, hey, I know this place well.
And she shows back up.
She does say she knows it well. Does it mean she was trying to like bring other dudes there?
Well, that's what I'm
in the interim?
That's all. No. I think before
she knew to avoid it because she had the bun in the oven.
In the first verse when she first picked him up and she said, we drove to the hotel, a place that I knew well, you know, like implying that she'd been there before driving around picking up men. But let me say this, and this is the last in the story. She said, you know, you realize the guy that dawns on him that she's got his baby in, you know, in her arms. Which, by the way, they didn't just run into each other on the street. She, you know, she wanted to go show him. But she's like, please understand, I'm in love with another man. So
I'm just reading that right now.
And we need a room for.
She's so in love with the other man that she's just driving around, and he can't. And he's.
But
and
isn't the other he's man either impotent like the baby? Or like isn't the other man the kid? Like the it's the little boy.
That'd be one way to look at it. I don't think that's what part.
Well, no, because if you think about it, in a literal.
It happened one day. We came around the same way. You can imagine his surprise when he saw his own eyes, meaning the kid.
The kid's eyes.
I see. I said. Quote, please understand I'm in love with another man, and what he couldn't give me was the one little thing that you can.
Oh, yeah, that's probably not the kid.
Well, no, but I mean, technically that is true.
Yeah, sure.
And
well,
then,
sure. Yeah.
All I want to do is make love to you. One night of love is all we knew. All I want to do is make love to you. Say you will. You want me to. All night long. All night long. All night long. All night long.
And kiss your guitar.
Isn't it true? Well, two things. Two quick things. One. Why does it rain in all the 80s videos? I don't know why that is. Like, I don't know, like, where atmospheric
conditions. You don't remember the 80s?
Was it pre-Nino?
It rained a lot.
Yeah. Like, maybe, like.
Rainy decade.
That's what the 80s were known for.
It was, yeah, a lot of raining.
Yeah. Parachute pits.
El Niño 80s.
Yeah, so there was that. And then True or False said, like, I think one of the rough versions was most of what I want to do is make love to you, like the vast majority.
That's primarily what I'm
two thirds of what I want to do is.
I mean, I'd like to eat and sleep.
There's
some
a high percentage of things that I want to do, and some of them.
Primarily, it's make love to you, but in the it might not be bad to have to get up, and eat something every so often.
I'm not. Nobody's an island. Anyway, good song, Shane.
I just also, wonder how many notes that she left before she actually was able to go back and find the guy working.
Yeah, because you got to think that she was picking up all these guys waiting to get pregnant and then like leaving them all the notes, and then eventually one of them took, and so they all had the same notes, But eventually it took,
That's what she had, that weird stamp. Like that's probably not true. Anyway, no. Also, Heart, Seattle band. So a lot of the flannel.
They have a lot. I pretty much, we were talking earlier about Hooster Du and how they were the forerunners to Nirvana. Well, Heart, pretty much. Well,
okay, we can actually kind of tie this in. Cameron Crowe was married to
Nancy
Wilson.
And is the one that looks like Daryl Hall.
He directed Singles, which was in Seattle.
True.
And some of that scene was influenced by Husker Du.
And it rains a lot in Seattle.
Also does.
That all comes
that's
around.
The cherry on top of that shit Sunday right there.
The life is a perfect circle.
Life is a highway. Get it right.
Also that.
Let's go talk about Husker Du. Yeah, back to Husker Du and Zen Arcade. Another band beyond the Pixies and Nirvana is Sonic Youth. And
oh yeah,
that is another band. I could probably think of another band too if I really put my mind to it.
George
Rolling Stones.
Rolling Stones. That's another band.
Got it. Nailed it.
High five.
I really did not think you would do it.
I was dedicated.
Papa.
Papa. Fat Bald, no, that is not another band that I have ever heard of.
It might
so
be.
You lose.
It should be. Anyway, my point is we're trying to kind of dial this down a little bit. But there is a band called Sonic Youth, and there's a song called Teenage Riot off of Daydream Nation, which I think is a terrific song, perhaps the best Sonic Youth song ever.
It's a terrific song.
Yeah. So there is a song on this year's record, Zen Arcade, called Tooth Fairy and the Princess, which has a lot of sort of the George Martin of the Beatles, George Martin, backmasking kind of – is that what you call it? Like when they play the tape
spin
backward?
Spin it backward.
You spin it backward.
Backmasking, I think, is when they try to implant satanic messages into –
oh, right, yeah.
That can
like
only be
Satanist
revealed.
Lord. Satanist Lord.
Right. They can only be revealed when you play the tape backward.
Okay. Well, I don't know what you call it, but anyway, it's this, playing the tape backwards.
Like Revolution Number 9 kind of
– Number 9? Yes, that. In any case, I do like Tooth Fairy and the Princess, which to me sounds like there's a lot of George Martin stuff going on there. And I could definitely see Sonic Youth listening to this and going, that sounds like a cool thing. Let's try to do that. So do you guys want to talk?
Why don't we listen to it?
Let's listen to it. Dig it.
It's not a song. Where's there
it's,
a song
it's
in there?
It's not really, but it's just a snippet of experiment in the way that Revolution Number 9.
Revolution Number 9 is the worst Beatles song. I mean,
I'll give you that.
Okay, thank you.
But
like, this isn't a
I feel
song.
Like this
like,
song led to the intro to Teenage Riot.
Sure, but you know what the best part about Teenage Riot is after the intro ends?
I like the whole
song.
Like when the song kicks in?
Fine. I like the whole
thing.
I'm
just going to beat you down here.
I don't care.
I'm kind of with Ryan on this one. I don't dislike it. I think that it's...
There's nothing to...
And here's the thing. It feels to me like it's intended as a transitional piece. Like it is... Like,
and there's a lot of this
context,
record that is that way.
As a transitional piece, like, that's what I was saying. There's nothing to dislike here. I mean, it's fine, but there's nothing to like either.
I think it was a bit too long of a transition.
Yeah, it's really long. It's overly long. I'm with Mark on that.
Well, and you have to kind of like, whatever. I guess you could say this about music in general, but if you like kind of just let yourself get lost in it for a minute, like if you don't try to interpret the backwards masking too hard or whatever the overall
technique is.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to interpret that. I mean, I guarantee you, like I have taken LSD before, where that would have been maybe moderately more interesting.
Yeah,
in that moment,
I thought it was the very least more than moderately interesting, and it's because like cycling back to what we talked about before. You know, like having heard stuff that was influenced by this record.
You hate shit like this normally. You hate I'm thinking of like Philip Glass type stuff.
I never liked Philip Glass.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You hate shit like this song.
If it was an entire record of that, I would. But I can hear a direct line from this record to the Pixies, to Nirvana, and to Sonic Youth.
I can too, but you know who I'd rather listen to? Where the
Any
eventually
of those
ends
bands?
Up.
Yes, fine. But it's a little bit of, not archaeology, but like... What's the one that's
less
humans?
Less expository, more
anthropology.
Anthropology. Thank you.
So here's like while we're kind of on the subject, and you know how much I love to harp on these like goofy rankings, but Spin Magazine ranked this record number 4 on their list of top 100 alternative music albums, ahead directly ahead of Nevermind, and 2 spots in front of Patti Smith's Horses. So chew on that.
Don't care about Patti Smith's Horses.
Yeah,
I've heard it.
We're going to be on the same page on that.
Yeah. Anyway, but it just goes to show you that, like, there is a little bit of a, you know, I think it's another one of these situations where sometimes, like, records over time, and again, I don't know if this is because of scarcity or if it's just because, like, yeah, people, like, the right people heard it, and over time, like, it gained a little bit of momentum. But it's a critic, like there's no mistaking that,
it's a critical darling.
One thing that needs to be said, and like, you know, I wanted to make a point earlier, and then I started like being a goofball. But there's something to be said. You have to remember bands or acts or actors or musicians' place in the continuity of things. You know,
I look at like the early SNL sketches, like they're not that funny to me now.
I agree. Yeah,
but you can see that the
genesis of something. Yeah,
you know from point A to point Z or whatever.
You can't get nuance unless you have a beginning point.
Right, and I think sometimes, I mean, you're completely right about it. You know, you watch like if you watch some old silent movie or some old movie, and you're like,
imagine how amazing it would be to see Buster Keaton like standing with like a house fall down or around him.
Well, Buster Keaton, that shit still is amazing. I mean,
it is,
mind blowing, right? Yeah.
Let me put it this way: there's an interesting quote in the Wikipedia article about this page, and it's from a guy who was a sort of the, I guess, the faceplate of the Northern Irish band Therapy. Mark.
Question mark? Yes.
Anyway, this is funny. He listed the album as his 7th favorite album of all time, which is very specific.
Like, who's very specific? Was that like, he's not a journalist, he's a band member, and like, who's the guy that like writes down their own?
Did he give the rest of the 6?
Well, no, it's not on here. But I did find one poll quote from that I thought was kind of interesting. He said, "I got this at a time when I needed to hear fearsome music that wasn't just boneheaded rage." And I think, like judged
and
under
that
lens,
that's kind of what
I was
saying earlier. Like, if you were 19 or 20 at the time when you were just all you were into was like, you know, this like hardcore, pissed off at the world, and you wanted to transition to maybe a little bit more of an adult, this might be the record for you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it's the record for me as a middle-aged man now.
I don't think it would have even been the record from, that's not true.
Hard to say. Like, I don't know. I
never really liked hardcore, even when, you know.
I don't like hardcore. Like 15, I don't like the
when
songs.
When I was 15, like, and my friends were skating, and that's all they listened to, I never.
I don't like the songs on this record that are hardcore. I like the stuff that kind of branches out from that.
Some of it is a decent listen.
Well, I will say this, Ryan, you and I are exactly on the same page with regard to the fact that I knew that this is one of these records that, like, I've heard about all my life, and I just never, I don't know if I never made the time for it, or if I was just never, like,
it was one just, to check off the list.
Our orbit never intersected for one reason or another, and so I'm glad I had a chance to do that.
Cool. Well, so,
Can I have an epilogue here?
You should have
do
an epilogue.
It, have
just bringing up a Guardian article here from October 16th of this year. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs here. Readers of Bob Mould's autobiography, See a Little Light, could have been forgiven for thinking the former Husker Du frontman had not so much burned his bridges with his old bandmates as dynamited them, then dug an even deeper channel in the river to ensure there was no chance of them ever being on the same side of the water ever again. Now it seems he must have mellowed. The beloved and influential alt-rock band have just unveiled their first activity in decades, and though no reunion has been announced, bassist Greg Norton has coyly referred to the band hiring a manager to help us get a foothold back in the business. For now, all Husker Du have unveiled as their first official webpage. It is their only official activity since their 1994 live album, The Living End.
So,
oh no, they Husker didn't.
Sounds like they might Husker.
No, that's twice.
You've been waiting. Oh no, he said a Husker don't last time.
I know, but it's
he's just waiting the whole goddamn show to say that.
Oh, happy evening, everyone.
So it sounds like Minneapolis little trio may be venturing back out into the world, fellas.
Well, it would be interesting to see how he's going to sing songs about youthful alienation as a 60-year-old man. For sure.
Well, or alternately, like, because it seems like Bob Mould dives face first into everything that he's, like, musically that he's getting into, like...
Or wrestling.
Well, or physically, whatever.
Don't they do that in wrestling anyway?
He has been kind of having, you know, and maybe it's, you know, midlife crisis, post-midlife crisis or whatever, but, you know, I know a couple of years ago he came out and he was doing a lot of sugar stuff and like really
didn't, didn't they redo all of Copper Blue? Like they came out and did a show.
He came out and did a tour where all he was just playing Copper Blue straight through.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of reflection there, I think. So maybe this is part of that. Maybe he's looking back on the past and thinking maybe this stuff has some life left in it.
Well, we'll see. Maybe there's an Austin date or wherever you are, America.
Maybe they'll open for Dixie Chicks.
That would be something.
Kevin, you have the new song tonight?
I have the new song. That was Christine and the Queens. It's literally just something that hit my inbox a couple of days ago. One of the promotional emails that I get from time to time. It's a song called "Tilted." This was really interesting to me when we were watching it because Mark said, "Well, they're clearly British," and I was like, "Nope, they're French as shit."
I was gonna say they're really French.
They're super French. So anyway. In light of it, I don't know. I assume that it's probably because like France has been on TV a lot lately. We've been on not an unintended hiatus. So I've had a little bit of that on the brain. And when this popped up in my inbox, I was like, oh, like, let's just see what it's like. Well, the interesting thing is like, I didn't watch that video all the way through. I just watched a little bit of it before I decided to put it in my hip pocket, and it's very French, it's very European, and
I thoroughly enjoyed the music.
Yeah,
I thoroughly enjoyed the video.
It's peculiar.
We're gonna split right down the middle. I thought the song was great. Like I thought that hook was crazy good. I could have done without the rap, the whispered rap in the middle.
A little French rap.
But sure. Dance music and any kind of modern dance.
Huh?
Yeah, any kind of modern dance to me is like, it's so self-aware the whole time.
I cannot think of another video that has been entirely choreography.
I actually just kind of enjoyed the fact that like her band members would like, I mean, so if you haven't seen the video yet, Look up the official video on YouTube for Christina.
I don't know that it's a band. When you say
who's
band,
that girl?
An act.
Sia?
Like whatever.
Is that a thing that's like she's played on SNL?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She did like that video.
It kind of reminds me of that, and that bores me to tears, which this also did. I cared nothing about this
okay.
whatsoever.
I think it's like a mood. Like I liked it a lot, and I think it's like
and you are so welcome to.
Sure, I know. That's why I'm saying it.
Yeah, so I was.
This for me, this is like get stoned and like just chill.
Yeah, it's mood music. It's like the kind of thing that I would love.
I can't smoke enough weed to like this.
Well, you sure can drink enough beer to keep fucking interrupting me.
Lovely.
It's the kind of music that you put on, the kind of song that you put on in the background, like when you're making dinner and people come over, like dinner party music, you know, that kind
of
stuff.
Well, here's the thing that struck. There are a couple of things that struck me interesting. One, like from watching the video, and this is just a choreography note. If you do end up catching a little bit of the video, there are four people in this act, and you know she's the main one. And I guess the queens or whoever the rest of the act are, like they all dance in unison, and then one by one they all sort of fall off the stage. Like,
Is the woman the main dancing blonde lady? Is she like?
I believe that is Christine.
Is that Christine or are those dancers that they hired for the video?
Well, all of that's a fair question to ask, and I honestly don't know. But I mean, but the impression that I get
TBD.
Here's the interesting thing, and this is why I think that it's probably Christine who is fronting the whatever the dancing
the queens.
You know, when you get the press stuff or the publicity stuff on this, it's like there's always an angle. Like they're always trying to like sort of position this act, and so
you have the press release.
I have the press roll up on this, which is like from a bunch of different publications, and it's fascinating. And so the sort of overall bubble up is that it's like it's a sort of female French act that is maybe most appropriately associated with the Michael Jackson space. Like, not literally, but in terms of, like, appealing to a similar audience.
The Michael Jackson demographic?
So it says... So
yeah, that's kind of like the world.
Stay with me. So it's like, here's an excerpt from... The excerpt from Pitchfork, who we know we like to punt around from time to time, is Christine punctuates her sweet off-kilter pop music with a distinct type of movement, a mix of Michael Jackson, fluid contemporary, and Vogue. And then... Fader says this, and this the first word of this I think is hilarious. It calls this pungent, slinking, and synthy pop. And I don't even know what that means, but I'm like, all right, like
those are things that music writers like to say.
Yeah, of course they do. Yeah,
of course they are.
So anyway, it says I think that her press people are probably trying to push her as into a sort of Michael Jackson space, and sometimes the shoe fits and sometimes it doesn't. I thought, like, just based solely on this track and this video, I thought the track was kind of fun, and I thought the video was simple and European and different, and you know, probably not something that I'll seek out over and over again, but like. Worth a couple of minutes of my time just to have a little bit of fun with.
Yeah, this is way more my style, stylistically, like the dancier beat stuff, but like the low key dancey beat stuff.
Oh, Vogue says, and I don't know. Well, I'm reading this
Vogue
out,
like
I'm reading this the out magazine? Of context.
The magazine Vogue.
Yeah. So
that's
listen
known
this.
For his music.
Yeah, I was gonna say like that.
Well, this is kind of interesting. It says, what do electropop act Christine and the Queens and fashion darling Simon Port-Jacquemou have in common? ? That's maybe where the Vogue part comes in. Both are French sensations taking to the world stage with grace and apparent ease. The silent third partner to this joint creative is Kanye West. So I don't know if that means that this is like an act that's also got some fashion tie-in. Like,
that's
I don't know what the hell is
going on.
Got
pushed into like, my consciousness. Because this person with some sway, I don't get.
Yeah, it's not, and it's
at
not
all.
Your bag. It's probably not my bag first either. But it's like, but it is interesting as shit. Like I'm just fascinated at like
It looked like performance art.
Yeah. Well, no, the video. Don't give me the video. Like, yeah. Oh, go ahead. I didn't mean to.
I was just going
to
say, I don't know that I would have enjoyed it as much had I not listened to it first, watching the video. I think.
Yeah.
It adds.
Interesting.
Quite a
it's
bit
so
to
funny.
It.
Like we have so four like distinct like react. Like I can't
We're,
stand
it's
that
like,
dance.
This
shit.
Is like the Rubik's Cube of criticism.
That's true. All right, and on that level. Thank you for playing on that level.
We should get out of here.
Yeah, let's go ahead and stop it. Kevin, what do we got next week?
Oh, yeah. You know, here's the thing. So I've wrestled with this a lot, like to the point where I'm bruised on the inside. But
well, you should talk to Bob Mould. He'll probably like do like a wrestling write up for you.
we are not gonna do that. But. But I might wanna extend the like a little bit of the French thing, and why don't we tackle the first Tahiti 80 record next week?
Nice.
Didn't we see them on my birthday?
We did, and we could tell that story when we come back next week. But yeah, I think it's called Puzzle. It's Puzzle. I think it's Puzzle.
I was gonna say Mosaic, but I think that's a song. That's
anyway,
on
it's
Puzzle.
It's a record which we all know to a certain degree, but it's not one that everybody knows. And it's also one of these records that we're like, I kind of feel like that band did something. Well, we'll get into this a lot more. Like what they have become is not where they started.
Well, remember, I picked one of the first current affairs. I picked was a current Tahiti 80 song. It's about a year ago.
Okay, so. That's right. Yeah. So let's do that next go around.
Well, kids, let's get out of here.
Sounds good. We'll see you next week. Shane.
Ryan.
Kevin.
And Bill.
And this is John Goes Fishing, and we'll be back on the flip side.